We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes, it's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I got a bad feeling about this.
You see, we're on a mission from God.
Why, oh why, didn't I take the blue pill?
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
You want answers!
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
Tackling life's most important questions. This is the Don Johnson Show.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the Don Johnson Show. Great to have you along today on Immaculate Heart Radio. And Timmarie Millington, great to have you along. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here, Don.
You know, we had our best response ever to last week's show. They said you must have Timmarie on every week.
Fantastic.
So that's what we're going to do.
Yes, I'm happy to be joining you each week. I think we make a great team, and we are willing to go into uncharted waters,
well,
as some people heard last week.
This is clear. Nothing is out of bounds here when Timmarie and I get together, and it is a lot of fun. So right now we're on once a week, Timmarie, and we're hoping to move that in the very near future,
yes,
to twice a week. So please stay tuned. Keep checking our websites. You can go to donjohnsonministries.org. Timmarie, what is your website?
You can find me at timmarie.com, and I am all over social media, Twitter, Facebook, and I love Instagram at Timmarie. It's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E.
I love the fact that your name is so unique. Do you know anybody else named Timmarie? Let's just throw that out there.
I've never met anyone named Timmarie. I've met a few people who know a Timmarie, and my parents each knew a different Timmarie,
okay,
in high school. So, yeah, it's pretty unique.
It is. I believe you're my first. My son was asking me this morning. I was like, hey, are you doing the show with Timmarie? Yeah. He's like, I don't think I know anybody else named Timmarie. I'm like, well, that's pretty cool, isn't it? Timmarie, being once a week, let's just do a quick review of,
yes,
of the last week's news, some of the hot topics. Now, did you catch the Oscars?
You know, I just saw clips of the Oscars, saw a lot of the very beautiful dresses. You know, I heard about the oops moment of live television,
yeah,
and award shows. And I have to say, I was really, really excited about the costume design for Fantastic Beasts. I thought the costumes were amazing.
Right.
So the fact that Fantastic Beasts won the Best Costume Award, very, very classic costume.
Nice. See, now, I couldn't think of one reason, honestly, to watch the Oscars. I know some people watch them for, like, the gowns on the runway or whatever, and who's,
mm-hmm,
wearing whom. But I honestly couldn't think of one reason why I hadn't seen any of the movies, I don't think.
You know, I saw some of them. I'm actually really, really bummed out. For anyone who doesn't know, since I'm new to this show, my background for over 20 years is that I danced for many, many years.
Okay.
And so I was so excited to see La La Land, and I never saw it. So I think from my perspective, even though, Grant, anyone who's like panicking here with a dance or singing background, I hear that the music and the dancing wasn't fantastic. But you know what? Across the board, I hear that people love the movie because it was so gritty and raw. It was just authentic.
Okay.
And so to hear that Emma Stone won Best Actress, Female Supporting Actress, I think was really neat to see.
Now, tell me about the dancing. What kind of dancing do you
do? I grew up classically trained, so formal ballet training. I danced,
wow,
with the Russian ballet company, the Kirov, for one summer in,
wow,
Washington, D.C. And I danced with my local ballet company for many years. And, you know, from point to tap and jazz. And I even did a little bit of West Coast swing in high school.
Really?
Well.
See, I did not know that. That's fantastic. So are you currently dancing? Like, we can go see you dance somewhere or no?
You know, with school, grad school and everything, and now being out, it was really hard to maintain dancing at the same time. So I'm trying as I can to take some dance classes.
Okay.
But yeah.
That's fantastic. All right. Well, we'll keep you updated on that. Yeah, I find that the Oscars are somewhat, I don't know, irrelevant to,
yeah,
like, people don't go to the movies generally, I don't think, because they saw them at the, I don't know. It just strikes me that there's a shift in the way that people consume entertainment,
mm-hmm,
even from movies to TV. TV seems almost
the way it is,
yeah,
now.
Better in many ways.
And I think people, it's a testament to how much people love real story and character development, because that's something you often don't find in a movie.
Yeah,
and,
that's true.
Yeah, and I think that people love that, and we're addicted as a generation to story.
Another article or news item that I saw this week that I wanted to get your take on. In fact, a couple of them. Because, Timmarie, would you consider yourself a feminist?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I don't have any trouble with the label, depending what you mean by it. And so, you know, we haven't known each other that long, but actually you do strike me as a feminist. And so there's a couple of stories.
Hold on there. I'm glad that I strike you as a feminist, but we've got to be careful here because I'm sometimes offended by what people call feminists.
Fair enough.
And
okay.
So I think that we've got to, like, address, yes, if I am a feminist, but also those people who are sometimes hollering the loudest in terms of the feminist movement are people who are in favor of abortion, contraception, and view that the differences between men and women should be essentially obliterated. Those aren't things that are fundamental to feminism. And I think that that's why I want to be careful people hear that, just to qualify for anyone who might be offended.
Put down the phone. We're not hiring, you know. Well, we're not hiring anybody because we're not getting paid to be here. Anyway, all that to say, I applied the label in the proper sense. Yes. I know that we had a long conversation on the show a few weeks ago about the Women's March.
Oh, yes.
You know, and how true feminism, true valuing of women, and I think the argument we made at the time had to do with being pro-life. Like, you actually have to be pro-life to be a true feminist, I would say, in the sense that you're actually valuing and esteeming women with who they're supposed to be.
Absolutely.
Right?
It's fundamental to the pro-woman movement, and it was there since the beginning. At some point, more so in the early 70s and 60s, We saw the pro-woman movement hijacked by the abortion movement.
Absolutely. In fact, I'm making a documentary about that. We're going to have more on that later in the show, so stay tuned for this. Okay, so a couple of stories then. Kellyanne Conway ran into a little trouble this week for this picture where she's sort of kneeling on the couch in the Oval Office, taking a picture of a bunch of men. And I just wanted to get your quick take on that. I didn't know really, honestly, what to make of it. I don't know. Are you not supposed to wear shoes? I don't know. You're not supposed to. I think there was other context. I couldn't figure out why she was kneeling way over trying to take the picture, why she wasn't just standing in front of them. But whatever. I don't know. I don't know the whole story. But some women, in fact, were angry about this.
You know, so Kellyanne Conway's in the Oval Office with President Trump. I think they've got something like 30 people of African-American black skin during Black History Month as it's ending. And it's a moment where these people are so excited to be there. I mean, imagine if you were in the Oval Office, what an excellent opportunity. Are you going to want a picture? Absolutely.
Of course.
So Kellyanne is trying to get the best possible picture for them. And in doing so, she comes and kneels on the couch. Her shoes are off. Her feet are on the couch. And she's like bent over trying to get the best possible picture. Now, again, we weren't there. We don't know if that was the best place. But the bottom line is she's taking a picture, Don.
So what was the problem? Because people didn't think she should be on the...
You know, I think people are offended how disrespectful. Your feet are on the couch. You're kneeling. Sure, maybe her knees were open a couple of inches. Like, okay. I could see that. But I think the bottom line is I'm seeing all these women who... I mean, it was one of the most trending things on Twitter for a little while here. I think one of the things that struck me is that these poor women who are in some of the highest ranking roles right now in the country, Kellyanne Conway. We're also seeing Melania Trump, the First Lady, and even Ivanka Trump, who are here representing women in very high levels. As a whole group, as a feminist, we should be proud of them and supporting them. But right now, Don, we are seeing such a severe level of criticism, and I would say outright gossip, public gossip about these women, that I think we need to take ourselves back a little bit as women, go, okay, let's allow and recognize that these are women living a daily life just like us, and we kneel on a couch to take pictures too.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, it strikes me, and this is why I wanted to ask you about it. I probably wouldn't have commented on this if it was just my show, but it seems almost like it's women against women doing most of the controversy
right now. I think women are really vetting themselves against one another, and they're missing the fact that we have a tremendous amount of common ground, which, I mean, this is something we've talked about specifically with human trafficking and even Ivanka Trump, how she's worked with her father to really bring forward the attention to the areas of human trafficking. We've seen some of the largest numbers of arrests just in the last month to end this child slavery.
Yeah, it's fantastic. One of the best stories I've seen.
Yes.
All right, one more story before we kick into high gear after the break. It's Lent. Kicked off Lent this week, Timmy.
What have you given up?
All right, here's my thing. Afternoon coffee.
Oh.
And so, I'll be honest, I generally tend to rely on that coffee in the afternoon to give me the energy to get through the day. And it's to the point where it has to be one of those, I'm sort of addicted to the powdered Via drinks. Like, so you buy one of those Starbucks Via packets out of the store and mix one of those up. I don't know. You combine it with the sugar. They give me a little boost. I'm too reliant on those things. And so I tried to pick something that I need to be less reliant on. And are you supposed to talk about the things you're giving up for Lent? I just realized maybe you're supposed to, Jesus said, you know, wash your face and, you know, what about you, Tim? Are you giving up anything for Lent?
You know, one of the things I'm working on is I think I'm really bad at sharing. I know I'm really bad at sharing. I think my generosity really fails in some areas. It may be strong in others, but just a funny story about this. My boyfriend, before we started dating years back, he asked to borrow a book of mine. He said, oh, okay, sure. Well, he comes back half an hour later and says, here, I underlined a bunch of things for you. My heart
sank.
I was like, the book was trash to me now. I mean, it was done. I didn't want to share to begin with. So one of the challenges I've heard, and I worked on this during Advent, is giving away one thing each day and adding the number up. Now, at first, I thought it was just material things of like cleaning up my closet. But then I learned giving gifts away or giving things away that I don't have to have or people might enjoy more, but also giving my time, writing letters. You know, I'm trying to find creative ways to be more generous because I'm not very good at sharing.
Wow, that's fantastic. Although you're fully justified in the book thing. That's horrendous. You can't take somebody's book and what's going on? Are you still with this guy, Tim?
I am.
Oh, my goodness.
You know what he told me later on? He said, I remember your face, and I wasn't sure what to do, and you just got really quiet and turned away after.
Oh, yeah. With total justification. All right, more on this when we come back. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Don Johnson Show. I'm here with Timory Millington. We were just commiserating during the break about the fact that Timory, and you're still going out with this guy, let him borrow
man.
A book. First of all, borrowing books. Woo. I mean, that's a tough one.
Yes. See, you understand.
Oh,
the
I totally
here.
Get that because they never come. I mean, I'm glad you brought it back. Okay. Although he defaced it. I don't know.
And but, we were in the middle of a course, too. It wasn't like it was a book that wasn't currently in use.
Oh, man.
It was pretty awful.
Yeah. I know. Now when I give away a book, and I over the years, I have tried to be like, all right, you know, I just assume it's not coming back and I'm going to have to buy it again. That's sort of my attitude. Like, all right, here, just take it because I know. But, oh, boy, yeah. Just this week, I was looking for a book. My daughter is in a great books course in high school and reading a lot. In fact, it's an Inklings course. So she's reading a lot of Tolkien and Lewis and Dorothy Sayers and Chesterton and all these kind of people. And I've got all those books. And
yes.
I went to get her one off the shelf. Where was it? It's gone.
It was missing.
I hate that.
Yep.
I probably let somebody borrow it.
But
that's
you know
what?
I think that it's a lesson for us in recognizing it brings a moment of joy. People have the opportunity to receive knowledge, to receive something that you own that you're literally giving to them. You know, just like one more little funny story. During Advent, I was cleaning things out and trying to give things away, and I accidentally took a headband that I really loved and put it in my pile of things to give away to my sisters.
Okay.
And, you know, they were nicer things. And I'm giving them to my sisters, and I realized I gave this headband to my little sister, and she was like, head over heels, put it on her head, and was walking around. And this is how bad I am. I had this like twinge of, that's mine.
Yep.
And my mom goes, you know, I'm really surprised that you gave that headband to Gabby. It looks like something you'd wear. And you know what? It made me so happy. I'm like, you know what? This is really good for me.
Yeah.
It's good for me. And also to see that in our generosity, even when it hurts or when we want to be generous, you know, it touches other people in a way we don't understand.
I love that. If you missed the first segment, Timory's giving things away for Lent. I think that's a great idea. We'll have to keep updated on that during Lent. All right. Story I wanted to ask you about, Timory, that I just read before I got to the show. So Sarah Silverman is a comic. I don't know. I feel like she was maybe famous in the 90s, and then she just keeps popping up whenever she says something that people are offended by. I could be wrong. I don't know. She had a show somewhere at some time. Anyway, she made some news this week with a tweet she sent out, and I wanted to share the tweet with you and get your response. Here it is. As a comic, always working and on the road, I have had to decide between motherhood and living my fullest life, and I chose the latter.
Okay. Wow.
So as you can expect, let me just repeat it in case you missed it. So she's a comic, always working on the road. She says, as that, I've had to decide between motherhood and living my fullest life, and I chose the latter. Well, where to begin? Of course, people were quite upset at this. Well, actually, some were.
Does she have children?
No.
She doesn't have any children?
No children. And the reason, she says, is that I have had to go and choose to live my fullest life. And so since I couldn't have kids and do that, I decided not to. So after getting a little, well, she did get some positive.
There's some people who choosing to live this lifestyle, and I think really appreciate her having said this.
Yeah, there was a lot of, you know, you go, girl. That's great. But to the detractors, she actually doubled down and said that, for one thing, men don't have to do this. They don't have to choose between their fullest life and having kids. She says, I'd so love to be a fun dad, coming home from the road and being my best fun dad self.
Hmm.
But she can't do that. So let's start there. On one hand, I get all of the detractors. Like, you seem like you're saying the fullest life is for me not to have kids. I get that maybe there's an implication there that those of you who have decided to have kids are not living your fullest life.
Yes. It sounds offensive to many women who are having children, are home with their children. It's hurtful.
Yeah. And there is an element to society. In fact, the author of this article that I'm reading in National Review right now, a woman who decided to have one, she decided to get married when she was in her early 20s. And then, in fact, she was 22. And then she had kids when she was 27. And she said, both of those decisions were treated by her friends and colleagues as, what are you, crazy? Why would you ever get married when you're 22? Why would you ever have kids when you're so young? You're still in your 20s. You need to wait until you're, you know, well into your 30s or 40s or whatever. To do that, first you have to get established. And so this author is saying, for me, it was a great decision to get married. It was a great decision for to have kids. How can Sarah Silverman say to me that I'm not living my fullest life?
Yeah.
And so on that, well, let's get your feedback. I mean, on that, I sort of see the people who are at home, their mothers, or they're trying to do both or whatever, and they say, hey, Sarah, who are you to tell me that I'm not living my fullest life?
I think this touches at the heart of a problem we're seeing in general between women. And we mentioned this earlier, even with the Kellyanne feet on the couch situation. There is this envy and controversy and just a deep criticism between two groups of people. Working women, sometimes that means working moms, and moms who are home with their children or maybe working part-time from the home. And I think that for many women, anytime a comment is made upholding one position, it's taken as an immediate offensive remark to the other side. And so I think the first thing is we have to kind of pull back and say, okay, is this meant to be offensive to the other group? Because a lot of the time it's not. A lot of the time women who are saying, hey, I love being home with my kids, best life ever, they're not criticizing necessarily. Now, I think some probably are, but I think that's the first moment we have to step back, ladies, everyone, you know, are we really being offended here? But two, I think that Sarah Silverman really does hit on a chord here in the sense that women are constantly talking about being in the workforce or when they will enter in or out of it. Men don't really talk about this. You know, there are those occasions of the stay-at-home dads or house husbands, as I think the movie The Intern clearly emphasizes that's what they like to be called.
We'll have to check that out.
You have to watch it. Please, anyone, you have to watch The Intern. It is a fantastic, fantastic movie. It has Anne Hathaway, and who's the older gentleman in it? I'm forgetting his name. Off the top of my head, we'll have to pull it up.
We'll find it, yeah.
But the Intern is a great movie. But my point is that she's touching on something that, as a working mom, she's chosen, Sarah Silverman, to not have children. She's as opposed to these moms who are maybe working at the same time or having kids. And I have to ask, is her value, and I think this is the real problem with the question, not whether or not it's offensive. The real question is, if you are working, is that what gives you value? Is that what gives you life? And, you know, for being someone who's really in my mid-20s, most of my friends are married. A lot of them are stay-at-home moms. You know, it can be hard sometimes seeing both sides of this, yeah, of, you know, maybe desiring to have a family and children, but also being in the workforce. And I myself am constantly having to keep myself in check, recognizing my work isn't my value. The person I am, the virtue that I have, the sins that I have and trying to combat them, that is where you find value before God. And how you do your job matters more than what your job actually is.
Right.
And I hope this is something that Sarah Silverman maybe understands.
Yeah, that would be nice. You sense, in fact, she did a podcast last year where she said that it's a sadness for me because I love kids. I ache for kids. But I love my life more. No. You can't have it all, she says. You really can't. And this strikes me, by the way, Vince Vaughn and Owen Wilson, are those the
Robert
actors?
Robert De Niro's in it.
Oh, and Robert
her.
De Niro,
yes,
also.
Robert
gotcha.
De Niro.
All right. Anyway, there's the sense, and I think this is, I hesitate to say this as a man, but you can correct me if I'm wrong.
No, go for it.
I feel like the sexual revolution sold women a bill of goods, mm-hmm, that told them, one, you can have it all. You
yes.
can be the ultimately successful professional person mm-hmm. that we've only ever seen men do, with a
yes.
few exceptions, right? But
yep.
You can be that. And we know that deep down inside, well, maybe they didn't say this, but I think there was this subtle implication. Listen, you're the ones that are having the kids. You're essential for civilization. I mean, if we're going to have kids, you're the ones that are going to do it.
Yep.
And we kind of sense that you actually like kids and enjoy being mothers, a lot of you. And so you just have it all. Just do it all.
Yes.
And I think Sarah Silverman's actually being a little bit more straightforward than some of the women that came before her when she's saying, you know what, you can't, sorry. That if you are going to go ahead and pour all of yourself, or at least as much as you need to pour into, to say, be a huge business executive or whatever.
Yes.
You know what? You're going to sacrifice time with your kids. It's just a simple fact. I mean, there's not enough hours in the day. And so your kids, if you're going to have kids, they're going to be in daycare, or you're going to wait until you are later in life to have kids. And that's a struggle. In fact, mm-hmm. one of our most responded to shows we ever did, Timory, was when we talked about the struggle that women are having, having kids later in life.
Yes.
It's a huge
heartbreaking
problem. It's a huge
yes.
problem in the culture.
Yes, very much so.
But that's all a result of this notion that, yeah, you go ahead, you have it all. It'll be fine. You be like men and be like women, and there's no distinction. Well, no, I mean, Sarah Silverman, you know, as much as she may have offended a bunch of people, I think she actually struck on something that's true. That
yes.
she's, you know, you can disagree about whether or not her choice was the correct one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if she really wanted kids, maybe she should have had some. I don't know, maybe she still has time. But, you know, it's like there is a sense in which there's too much put on women. Like, you're expected to be all of it. And I was, well, no.
I think that you can't have it all at once as well. You
right.
can't have it all at once, and you can't have it all, you know, necessarily in your whole life. It's reality. Life isn't fair, necessarily. We don't get to do everything we want. There are great ideas I would love to accomplish, but maybe I'm not the right person. Maybe I don't have the talents, the time, the treasures to do it. And I have to respect that. And I think that I have to commend a lot of women who are finding ways, especially as the cost of living is higher, to find ways to help support their family, or maybe continue with utilizing the gifts that they have in the workforce while still focusing that first and foremost, your children come first. And we can't ignore that.
Well, yeah. Well, and we're going to have to talk a little bit more about this when we've run out of this. These segments go very quickly, Timory. All right. You're listening to The Don Johnson Show. I'm here with Timory Millington. We will be right back after this short break. Stick around. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to The Don Johnson Show. My name's Don. I'm here with Timory Millington. Timory, before the break, we were talking about Sarah Silverman's tweet that generated a lot of feedback this week. And she talked about how she had not had kids, even though she actually liked kids, and it was sad for her not to have kids. But she chose the more fulfilling path, the happy life for her, was to go and be a professional comic. And people thought maybe she was denigrating motherhood. I actually don't know if she was. Maybe she was, maybe she wasn't. But I think you could interpret her remarks as saying, for those of you that have kids, great. I just decided I couldn't do both. And before the break, you mentioned that the cost of living, I know that there's a lot of women, my wife included, frankly, who are out there working. My wife works full time and is a great mom. And I work full time, but we do it. We have a flexible enough schedule that we're, you know, doing the homeschooling. If we lived somewhere else, although frankly, not that many places, maybe we could make,
we live in the most expensive place in California.
Here. But part of the reason it's so expensive is that we are, and I put this across the board, like in most places in the country, actually, if you look, I think if you look at like the cost of living, a lot of times the women have to work, or like both partners actually do have to work to make that, you know, feasible. And again, I think that's a result of the sexual revolution saying to women, you have to be, not necessarily you have to be, but part of your value now, and you talked about the value thing before the break, part of your value now is not just being a mother, that you have to get out there and have it all. And we've, Cy Keller is really good on this in discussing the cost of living. We've increased the cost of living because of the sexual revolution. Now we've got this vicious cycle.
Exactly. I was going to mention that. It's true. It's true, Don. The cost of living, we've adjusted our lifestyle. We've chosen to live a lifestyle that is necessary for a dual income. I know a lot of families with making great sacrifices who do survive on a single income or find ways to have the mom working from home, having the flexible schedules like you've mentioned. And I think that there's a beauty in the sense that we now recognize something we didn't recognize 100 years ago necessarily, that the suffragettes were fighting for, that women need to be involved in all areas of life. It's right. True. I think their voice, their impact of recognizing the feminine experience and the experience of children was missing. Well, now we see that women are so valuable. There's a complementarity. We need them in offices. I had a friend recently who said they've recently been going through a ton of new hires at their company, a big corporate business America. And he said, it's been a lot of men. And he said, it's kind of turned into a playground. We've started hiring more women. People are working more efficiently. There's more collaboration. Not that men were lousy by themselves, but there was something that was missing in that office, in a sense of accountability.
Yeah, right.
And he, this came from another man. But so I think it's great, again, that we're valuing women in all areas. But again, there's something wrong. I think there's at the core of this Sarah Silverman tweet is the fact that there's a lot of sensitivity around motherhood or the lack thereof. And we need to be willing to continuously have this conversation, not be overly quick to jump on it as well, but recognize, and you said this, there are a lot of women who have delayed having children and can't now. And what are we sacrificing, whether it's maybe a contraceptive mindset and we're taking hormonal contraception that is now impacting our body years later and our relationships later on as well.
Absolutely.
It's not just that we can't have kids. It's sometimes that we don't have a long-term companion and relationship later on because of the mindset that we allowed to take place.
All right. That's a great segue, Timory. We are going to move off of the sexual revolution stuff. But before we do, you talked about the contraceptive mindset. Just this week, I started an Indiegogo campaign for my latest documentary. As you may know, I've become a filmmaker. Didn't anticipate that a couple of years ago, but I made the documentary Convinced as I was exploring the Catholic Church, and it turned into this amazing thing, and I just loved it. And so now we have a new documentary project, and here's what it's all about. The effect of what you just called the contraceptive mindset. I think that's a great way to put it. The effect of widespread acceptance and use of contraception on the culture, how that fueled the sexual revolution, and how the sexual revolution essentially destroyed our culture. I don't think that's putting it too, maybe that's putting it too strongly. I don't know. We're going to make that argument, though, in this documentary. It's called Unprotected. That's the name of the film. And the subtitle is How Contraception Fueled a Revolution That Destroyed the Culture. And so here's where I'd like you to go. Check this out at ReverseTheRevolution.com. That's the website, ReverseTheRevolution.com. You'll go, you'll find the Indiegogo campaign for the documentary Unprotected. We have got a whole bunch of amazing people already lined up. Now, basically, we need the funds. The people are in place. In fact, Timory, we talked a little bit about this.
Yes.
I know we're going to get you on this film.
I'm excited to work with you.
We're going to get Timory in the movie. We're also going to talk to people like Jennifer Fulweiler, Abby Johnson, the former Planned Parenthood director, Christopher West, the popularizer of theology of the body. One of my favorite professors I ever had at Franciscan University is a man named Dr. Donald Ashe. Absolutely the best class I think I ever took in my life. A theology of the body expert, but actually a more of a marriage and family. He would call himself a marriage and family expert. We have an interview with him that you're really going to enjoy interspersed in this documentary. A few other people, Patrick Coffin, who I just had had dinner with Patrick last night. Patrick Coffin has a book called Sex et Naturel. Actually, he's renaming his book. His book is being re-released.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, a little bit updated. And in fact, Patrick, speaking a little bit out of school here, he was a little miffed that I had such a great name for my movie.
I'm going to admit it is epic.
He's like, I really could have used that on the re-release of my book. Sorry, Patrick. You're out of luck, buddy. So Sex au Naturel is Patrick's great book on the contraceptive mindset. And he has some great stuff. So we're actually going to interview Patrick. I have a little clip on the Reverse the Revolution website of Patrick, but we're actually going to go and reshoot a whole brand new interview for this film and a whole bunch of others. Dr.
Excellent.
Jennifer Roback Morse.
Fantastic.
Fantastic. Her whole ministry, the Ruth Institute.
Please go there, theruthinstitute.org.
Oh, her work, so good.
She's reaching out to victims of the sexual revolution. And this is the catch with her. Not only does she focus on the victims, she focuses on the children who have been victimized by the choices of adults. And
absolutely,
I don't think we talk about it enough.
You know, there's all these things as I'm going through the material and trying to lay out, starting to try to storyboard this thing. I'm actually like, we may have an 8 or 10 part. It may be like one of those PBS things where you're just going to have to go 8 or 10 hours, because you look at all the victims. And I love the Ruth Institute because they focus on that. Like, this is a revolution. And that's why I'm so strong with the subtitle, that has had so large an impact. And I think Mary Eberstadt has several great books on this. I am just rereading Adam and Eve After the Pill.
Fantastic book.
Such a good book.
Easy read, too, people.
Oh, it absolutely
easy read,
is.
But solid content. If you want a good argument responding to the sexual revolution, please pick it up.
And what Mary Eberstadt does in that book is go through sort of piece. Here's what it did to the children.
Yes.
Here's what it did to the men. Here's what it did to the women. And it is, it's the least of these the children, it's been horrific. It's been horrific for the children. Mm-hmm. Because the contraceptive mindset, it's not like it just, we were just talking about women in the workforce. I mean, on one hand, that's absolutely great. Like I said, my wife, she works full time. I mean, she does very well at her job. It's great for the men there to have her. I mean, you pointed that, I mean, it is great. But on the other hand, there are some detrimental things, not least of which is, in fact, I was talking to a friend of mine, his 3-year-old is in daycare like 8 hours a day, 5 days a week. And hey, as a parent, I'm very non-judgmental, I'll be honest, about the way other people parent. I would never, but I know that that's tough on children. And he would admit it. The guy would admit it. It's not like he's like, no, I get that. That's a tough deal. Well, there's a lot of that. Children, not only the daycare mentality, but the instability that the sexual revolution has wrought on relationships.
Yes, absolutely. And I keep thinking about this too right now, Don, because I think the daycare topic is a really sensitive and tough topic. I think some people are doing what they can, but also I think a lot of us can do better as a community to help support and have the right surroundings to do better by our children as a whole. As a community, not just as a parent.
Yeah, not like here's another institutional thing that we can set up, but as fellow parents.
Fellow parents, grandparents, aunts, uncles. I think that, turning back to the fact that having family around and doing what you can to raise families. But what I was going to mention is, just from a study perspective, two books that we already mentioned, Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse and her book, and I just had it and I lost the name of it, Love and Economics. In her book, she talks a lot about the need for child development, the need of that child to have physical interaction with the parents, especially in its fundamental and most early years. I think she talks especially about up to the age of about 5 or 6.
Yeah.
That kid really, really needs the physical contact of the parent, the undivided, really, attention at many points of the parent, because the child is learning how to love and be loved. And they're learning, essentially, unconditional love, that they may do something wrong and there may be consequences, right, but they can come back. And they come to encounter our Lord through this.
Oh, absolutely. One of Mary Eberstadt's more recent books is The Reason the West Really Lost God, or something like that. How the West Really Lost God, I think. Unbelievably good book. But she talks about just what you said, how they encountered God. When the sexual revolution took root, she says, and she studied all these different countries, it's not that they lost religion before that happened. You know, mm-hmm. you think, well, did people, they became less religious, therefore their sexual mores became looser or whatever. No, no, no. It's the other way around. First, you become sexually immoral, then you lose God.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the reason for that is that family is a sacrament. Like, marriage is something that helps us experience God. When we lose that loving father in the home, when we lose the parents like that, especially at a young age, it's very difficult. In fact, we'll have to talk about more of this after the break. I love this topic. It's very difficult for people to really understand and experience this heavenly father,
yes,
that we talk about when they've never experienced a loving father. All right, this is Dawn and Timmery. You're listening to The Dawn Johnson Show. Stick around. We'll be right back after this short break. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to The Dawn Johnson Show. I'm here with Timmery Millington, talking a little bit about the sexual revolution. And I must admit, I have a bit of a selfish reason to do so, because I just started an Indiegogo campaign for the new documentary. And frankly, it may end up being a documentary series, because this is a huge topic. But it's a documentary on the sexual revolution, specifically the role that the contraceptive mindset played in that. And so you can go online, you can watch the trailer, you'll see some clips of Margaret Sanger and how she pushed towards the pill, and how her main opposition in that, frankly, almost her only opposition in that, was the Catholic Church. And Pope Paul VI said, this is going to be a disaster. And he was right.
That man needs to be canonized.
Oh, absolutely. He said it was going to be... Well, he said exactly this is what's going to happen, and what he said happened.
His predictions are phenomenal. If you go back and read Humana Vitae, I'm actually getting ready to post a series I did on Humana Vitae.
Oh, nice.
But we look back at it and you go, ah, yes. Even if we didn't have all the scientific information at the time, the church understood the human body as well as the religious side and the impacts that would take place.
Oh, man. So we are going to explore that in this documentary.
We need to make sure we get the website out there, Don.
Here's the website, reversetherevolution.com. The film's called Unprotected. It's got a bunch of great people in it, Dr. Jennifer Robach-Morse, Patrick Coffin. We're going to go interview them as we get the money, basically, is how it works. It's a great idea. People love it, but films take money, and so we're throwing it out there. We would love for you to go and support that, even right now, reversetherevolution.com. Now, we bring that up, and just before the break, we were talking about the effects that the sexual revolution had on children.
Yes.
And one of the things that happens with children, Timmery, you brought it up, they experience God when they experience loving parents.
Mm-hmm.
So when God created us in his image and he said, here's Adam and here's Eve, and together they were in his image, and go and be fruitful and multiply, that wasn't God just making stuff up. No, that was God showing himself to the world, being in the world, in a sense, that one of the primary ways we experience God in the world is through that loving relationship, through that family. And when you don't have that, when you grow up in a broken family, you tend to not just tend, you just do, because it's sacramental. You don't experience God as clearly.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I mentioned the book before the break by Mary Eberstadt, How the West Really Lost God. She lays this out. I sort of add the theological stuff. In fact, I've got a talk on this online. But she lays out just sociologically, here's the order. It's not lose God, then become sexually immoral. It's throw off all the sexual mores we used to have, then you lose God. And there's another great book called, I think, The Making of an Atheist or something like that. I can't think of his name. He's also got a book called Faith of the Fatherless. He is a psychologist at NYU. Anyway, he looks at all of history's most famous atheists, and he's like, there's a common element here. All of these guys either had no father or a defective father.
Oh, are you the book by James Spiegel, right?
There's James Spiegel. That's the one I was thinking of, but then I'm sorry. There's another guy, Faith of the Fatherless by, anyway, somebody else. This is a huge deal. As a Catholic, you can't be thinking that, well, the sexual revolution, I mean, yeah, it's sort of bad for the society. Of course it is, but it's bad on an eternal scale. Like this is spiritual warfare 101.
This is, I think, if people look at this, especially, you know, I hear so often the church needs to change with the times. People say this all the time, specifically surrounding sexual topics of contraception, gender ideology, homosexuality. But the reality is that the second we alter the natural and really truly organized plan for human love and sexuality, we start to create serious harm to individuals, not just on the level of a child who is now experiencing only one parent in the home, not only the child who's experiencing a divorce, and truly the long-term consequences that go into their adult life with this. But we're also talking, you're saying this, the eternal consequences of we're making it harder for people to come to know, love, and understand God because they have brokenness inside them that parents who are supposed to teach you the love of the Father, the love of the Trinity, they're not really receiving that first intervention. God is the supreme Father, right? He made Adam and Eve. He created the human universe and he co-creates the children today.
Yeah.
And now how are we imitating and following him? I think that's the question because, again, that's where we're seeing the brokenness.
That's exactly right. You know, one of my issues with some of the culture war things that go on is that we tend to use terms that have all of the theology sucked out of them.
Uh-huh.
So you'll have people out there, well, I'm all for conservative values or family values or this sort of thing. And I don't know if you've noticed this, Timory. Over the past couple of decades, the, quote, conservative movement in America has had the theological element almost completely kicked out of it. And so it's become more, you know, about free markets or freedom of whatever, including sexual freedom. And I notice what's interesting about this is, one, it doesn't work. So now we've got all of these issues with, quote, conservative people who don't have the upstanding moral character, the virtue. It's basically conservatism without virtue.
Ah, I see what you're saying. So we're missing, because we've taken God out of the, in a sense, I guess you could say platform, you're seeing that there's no principal reason for upholding morality? Is that what you're getting at?
Well,
here?
One of the things. I think that's one way of looking at it. And I've seen a few think pieces on that in the last few weeks. I know we've had like some sexual scandals within the conservative movement the last few weeks. We're not going to get into those on the show. But within that, there's been a call for, well, how do we get virtue back into this movement? And I think you actually need to push that even further. One of the things I think we've initially done wrong is it was never so much about even creating a particular kind of culture as it is ultimately we need to be creating particular kinds of people because that's what we're made for. Like ultimately, we're made to live for eternity in the presence of God in heaven. That's our goal. That's our end game.
I think the slogan for this, Don, would be people over productivity. People over productivity. Just like the example with Sarah Silverman, understanding that people really do have to come first over the productivity of our lives and what we feel like we're achieving. Because achieving the greatest good is a development and care of another person.
Yeah, I think so. That you look maybe even beyond certain societal goals that we might have. Are we really looking at individuals and their relationship with God?
Yeah.
Like, is that, I don't know, I just think in all of the, again, I go back to this culture war issue, and I've sort of abandoned it because I feel like, well, I just feel like the culture warriors are out there deriding each other, trying to achieve some sort of political ends, but ultimately, let's fast forward, if you will, to Last Judgment Day. Okay, so we're all standing there in the presence of God. What ultimately is going to be important about that interaction, right, that we had? What did we do to help that other person become someone who might actually be able to live in the presence of God, right? Like, I just think we don't have that eternal perspective.
You know, it's making me think real quick of Leah Darrow, who was on America's Next Top Model years back, had this conversion, reversion into the Catholic faith, had, you know, really had interactions almost with the pornography industry and a photo shoot she was offered, her life being destroyed in many ways when she walks out of a photo shoot, a very risque photo shoot. But she has actually this vision, she talks about it, where she's in the photo shoot and the lights are going off in her face from the cameras. And she's basically standing there before God wearing the outfit she's supposed to be wearing in this photo shoot. And she's, I think, if I remember, it's been years since I've read the story, but she's holding her hands up to God, and I'll never forget. And he's just looking down at her, and she's recognizing she has, she doesn't really have anything. She's been so broken. Her body's been so incredibly taken advantage of, and she's allowed this. And it brings us back to this question. Have we built ourselves up, again, this people over productivity, have we built ourselves up and others where we can lift our hands up to him and say, here's what I have. Not just the fact that I have some new scientific creation that is amazing and can save lives and make it so that some lives can impact others, but what have I done for not just humanity, but for specific people? And sometimes that begins with ourselves. What do we ourselves have to offer as a person?
I think that's a great question. I love that's a great story. I had not heard that story about Leah. But just even keeping that eternal perspective in mind. In fact, I've got an article here. We're going to have to just discuss it briefly. A National Review article called When the Pursuit of Happiness Became the Flight from Pain. And it talks about what does it mean to pursue happiness today? And the author, David French, says it's a big difference from what the founders understood as the pursuit of happiness, he thinks. And, you know, we're not going to debate that. But one point in the article I thought he made very well, he's like, basically, what do you look at as the pursuit of happiness today? Essentially, escape from pain. That people aren't, they aren't willing to risk anything. They aren't willing to do anything that would cause pain. There's a huge prescription drug industry that exists to keep you from having pain. And he goes through all this. It's a really good article. But in the end, he says, why are we not willing to suffer anything or take any risks? What is it that causes people to think that happiness is basically just me living in a cocoon, a pain-free cocoon, a pleasure cocoon, if you will? It's not even so much hedonism, although there's a little bit of that. And he says, it's because we think that this life is all there is. That if when I die, that's it, and I cease to exist, what's it all for? I'm just going to live here as pain-free as possible. But if we have an eternal perspective where the decisions we make today will, in fact, count for eternity, not only for myself but for the people around me, then we should be willing to risk a little. Then we should be willing to experience a bit of pain and suffering because long-term, it's going to be worth it. But I don't know. I don't know in our culture that we really have that sort of eternal perspective. So I thought that was a good point. All right. Look at all these other stories I didn't even get to, Timory. And here's the end of the show already. Well, we'll pick them up next week.
We'll pick them up.
We'll get to them. Timory, thanks so much for being here again.
Thanks for having me, Don. It's a joy to be here. And good luck with your Indiegogo campaign.
Thank you. ReverseTheRevolution.com is the website to go to. Please support today and join us next week on The Don Johnson Show.